Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to raise humor to an art form? And is the field as open as it should be to contributions by women? While many fans are delighted to see the attention given to performers like Mindy Kaling, Melissa McCarthy, and Jessica Williams, and the power wielded by people like Tina Fey and Lena Dunham, there is currently outrage over the lack of black women in the current cast of Saturday Night Live, and concern among many that funny women in the industry are not always taken as seriously as their male counterparts. My guests today are taken seriously by their colleagues and by the many fans who pay to see their work. Tina Parker, is administrative director and co-artistic director of Kitchen Dog Theater, and she played Saul Goodman's assistant on Breaking Bad. Amanda Austin is the executive producer of the Dallas Comedy Festival, and she performs and teaches at Dallas Comedy House. Linda Stogner is a stand-up comic, TV producer, and co-founder of Backdoor Comedy. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Hi. Hello.
Thank you.
It seems to me whenever we talk about women in any profession, there are like two narratives, right? Either we build each other up or we tear each other down. Is that overly simplistic when it comes to women in the performing arts and specifically in comedy?
I think it's an interesting way to look at it. Actually, I never really thought about those two ways. I feel like in Dallas, people are better about building each other up because there are obviously less women than there are men. But that's generally speaking. I think the people that tear down the women might be people that are maybe just jealous because they're doing well, and it's kind of a weird thing for women to be doing comedy. It's also interesting to me, though, that in 2013, it's still weird for women to be doing comedy because women have been doing comedy for decades. I mean, they've been very successful at it. So I don't know. I think the tearing down is more other people than it is the actual comedians themselves, for sure. I think they're pretty supportive of each other.
And I know it's better now than it used to be. I mean, it used to be really, really bad about everybody tearing women down. No one wanted us there. But it is a lot better now. And I don't know about women tearing each other down as much, but I know that women in general were so few that we kind of get behind each other. And there's, you know, it's just like anybody else. You like certain people and some people you don't like. So.
Well, I still think it's, I don't know, we were just talking about this in the lobby. I still think it's very present to talk about either in reviews, whether it's a movie, whether it's a play, the woman's appearance has to come up as part of the description, you know, as part of the qualifier, whether it's a great review or a crappy review.
Right.
And that's true in theater. That's true in film. That's true, I would think, in comedy as well, at least the shows I've seen.
When you say come up as a qualifier, do you mean like very funny for a woman, like that kind of thing?
Or no, I mean very one time I received a review that had to bring up the fact that I'm like plus sized. And so it was like, she's funny like Roseanne. And I'm like, how about I'm just
right.
funny?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, I'm sorry, we're on radio, so I probably should say I'm a size six. but you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why that still has to be part of the conversation, whether it's she's beautiful, she's crazy looking, she's, you know, I don't know. It always has to be part of it for some reason.
Yeah, and you made a good point when we were talking about that. You had said if Chris Farley, you know, when they review him, they never really talk about his size. He was a big, crazy dude, and he was really funny. But then was it Melissa McCarthy?
It was Melissa McCarthy, that recent, the Rex Reed controversy, when he was just went on and on about how big she was and how grotesque and how she's made her career on this. And it was a huge, like, controversy, like everybody responding to it. And I think that was a direct result of her being a woman doing those things, not, you know, and a woman of size. And I just, I don't know.
It
drives me crazy.
And actually, in stand-up especially, there's always, oh, we already got a woman.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Do we have one woman on the bill? Okay, we're good.
We got one. We're good.
Okay.
Next year.
What do you think is the reason for that? Like, why are there still, and it is, I guess, different for actors in general. There are as many women, if not more, than men overall.
Right.
But certainly in stand-up, and I think in improv as well,
for
there
sure.
are, the men outnumber the women. Is that because the men have historically decided who gets on stage?
I think it's actually just because more men try comedy than women who try comedy. And I think there are more women that are now trying comedy, and every year we continue to see more people. But I think the reason that people always think it's an anomaly to see a woman in comedy is because, like, really, if you just look at the numbers, you're obviously going to have more men who are good at comedy because more men in general are taking comedy classes and they're trying comedy. There's just fewer women. So I think that the women are just as good as the guys. They just, the numbers, if you just look at it from a number standpoint, there's just not as many women trying comedy. But there's a whole lot of guys out there who are really bad at comedy. Yeah. We just don't ever talk about them. And then there's girls out there who are really bad at comedy. And no offense to any of them listening, keep trying. But it's just a numbers thing. It's just there's more men, generally speaking, that have always tried comedy.
Do you think that's something about the risks involved in getting up there and trying to be funny? Because I've asked this question of, you know, had female politicians sitting in front of me and asked mm-hmm. the same question, like, why, when it's pretty clear that there are people who are equally capable, are fewer women interested in doing this thing?
I don't know. I mean,
The lifestyle can be rough, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, it's pretty bad. I mean, you're at night. And sometimes, I mean, the traditional story is that a lot of women take care of family, and so they don't have the freedom to be out all night and for stand-up anyway, in bars and that kind of thing, because they've got to be up in the morning taking care of the kids. There's no time to ride and da-da-da-da. But I agree with Amanda. It is the people who try and stand-up are mostly guys. It's not really a lot of women coming out. But the ones who do come and stick with it, that's the thing, sticking with it. So I'm not quite sure if it's just all the hazards to it or not. But
I think that, and this is my opinion, obviously, but sometimes it's cool for a guy to be funny and be stupid and get up there and kind of be the class clown. Every girl wants to date and marry a really funny guy with a great sense of humor. But sometimes it's hard for girls because in the past it's been expected of us to look nice and be together
nice.
And be nice mm-hmm. and be sweet and demure. So when you're up there really trying to do good comedy, whether it's stand-up, sketch, improv, whatever it is, you have to let those inhibitions down mm-hmm. and you have to look stupid. You can't always look really pretty with nice curled hair and all your lipstick on. You're going to make funny faces. You're going to look physically weird and dumb. And that's harder for people. I think it's just because of what's happened, like just the way society's been in the past. We just, girls need to look pretty and guys can be funny. And so that's why some girls don't try it, I think. But then once they do, I think they like it.
Yeah.
Tina, how do scripted roles compare for women and men when you're looking at comedic material? I mean, I know there's a broad generalization across stage and screen and all that, but
I don't know. I think there's been a resurgence in what you're saying as far as writers enabling women to be more than just what we want to see or whatever. I think the roles are starting to come about that are more interesting, more dynamic, more realistic, I guess, and you know. Everybody poops kind of thing, you know, I mean, and girls can do that crazy raunchy humor. I mean, Bridesmaids proved that, I mm-hmm. think. And I'm starting to see that more and more in plays as well, that the there's ladies that make mistakes and or maybe aren't as forgiving and are interesting, dynamic characters. And I'm right now I'm tending to see more of those, if mm-hmm. that makes sense, in playwriting and the scripts that we've read. And hopefully, I mean, we have enough crazy, wacky women at Kitchen Dog that we're, you know, we tend to do a few of those a season.
So you seek those out to
well,
produce.
I think there's kind of naturally align ourselves with the people in our company. And so those are tend to be the works that people will submit for season selection for us. And we're kind of drawn to those characters that are outside the lines that aren't neat and nice and in a box. I mean, that's just kind of the mission of the kind of theater we do at Kitchen Dog. But I have seen more of those roles, and that's exciting to me. So nobody's perfect, and that's good.
Did you all always recognize that you were funny, or did you have an epiphany when you realized, I have something special here, and I can do something with this?
You go first, Linda.
Me. Okay, good. Yay. Well, I've always sort of been weird, so that kind of helped. You know,
but weird and funny are not, they're not necessarily the same thing.
You're
yours
telling
are both.
Me. Yeah, it doesn't always come out funny.
It doesn't always work out.
But I think a little bit of an oddball. So I've used humor mm-hmm. to sort of help me get through some of those moments. And even in like my professional television stuff, humor has helped me as a producer sort of, you know, establish an identity. So it started pretty early for me as a defense, maybe, and it's just sort of blossomed into something. But I remember a lot of the comedians that I liked early on never succeeded, so I'm not sure what that means. But it's just comedy has always been a part of me in some kind of way. I've liked Lucille Ball or Gilda. They've sort of been heroes. And so I guess it's just in there maybe. I don't know. It's not that funny right now, so we'll have to question this whole thing. But go ahead.
No, I mean, I agree. Mine was probably just like a defense thing. It's so easy to kind of crack a joke when things are weird or awkward, even like when you're a kid. And my parents are pretty outgoing, and so I think I kind of picked up on that from them. But I've turned it less of a defense mechanism, more into a performance piece. Mm-hmm. But I still don't really think that I'm funny. People say, are you funny? And I say, well, it just depends on who you ask, because it really is relative. Some people may love what you do on stage or on the screen, and then some people may hate it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think I'm doing a decent job, but you know, I mean, when you're a comedian, you're so...
We're all insecure.
We're all insecure, and we're not saying this so that people will call in and tell us that we're funny. It's literally
yes, we are.
Okay,
we're all beautiful.
Do you think humor sometimes is like it's only possible if you're insecure?
No,
that's interesting.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, Meryl Streep is funny. I can't imagine her being insecure.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then she might be. I mean, some of us can really fake it on stage, and while we might be insecure, and I know all of you have worked with people who are brilliant on stage or on the screen, and then they get off stage and they're so socially awkward that they can't talk to anybody, and it's just so the insecurity and that kind of that awkwardness is masked by like the need and the want to perform. So Meryl Streep may be terribly insecure and we don't know it, but she's doing a great job of faking it.
Well, I think sometimes people that have that, I don't know, the gift, the comedy gift, it's like their brain fires faster. And they're able to, you know, everything, you can look at something and not everything is a joke, but you just come up with little things because of things that are happening in the room. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost like your synapses are firing a little differently.
Oh, and I'm sure Linda can attest to that because you write material all the time. So you're always looking at things in a different way.
What were you saying? Well, that's just my way. I mean, I try to look normal, but it doesn't come out that way. But I think in a way, this really all boils down to individuals. It's kind of hard to lump everybody together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think there's both. I think there's some people who are crippled off stage. They can't speak at all. You know, and sometimes I'm like that. I'm like, it's hard to believe right now. But then there's some people who are like the, you know, center of attention all the time. So it kind of, you have every kind of thing, you know. And I know a friend of mine who didn't even think about comedy, got in accidentally, and she's hilarious. And then I got another guy who's dreamt about it from the, you know, second grade, and, you know, he's hilarious. So I don't know where it comes from. I just think sometimes it's just in you.
Yeah, and I think for me, the funniest people are the place where it obviously comes from a place of within themselves, from a place of honesty about whether it's their experience or their childhood or whatever, but their comedy is created from somewhere that's unique to them. It's not, you know, the generic like, oh, aren't lady cab drivers hilarious?
Like you bought a joke somewhere.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. That's not very funny.
Right.
But the ones that are funny to me are the ones that...
Respond to uniqueness.
And it could be a really dark, evil place, you know, it's funny to us. You know, I would say like the big guys like Chris Rock or Richard Pryor or somebody else. They had some demons for sure, but that comedy was created from that.
Right. Yeah.
We're speaking this hour with Tina Parker of Kitchen Dog Theater, Amanda Austin of Dallas Comedy House, and Linda Stogner of Backdoor Comedy. We'll resume the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. And gift certificates are available at 214-768-CAPE or smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about women in comedy with Amanda Austin of Dallas Comedy House and Linda Stogner of Backdoor Comedy, both of which have special New Year's Eve shows planned. You can check out those online. Tina Parker is with us as well. She is co-artistic director of Kitchen Dog Theater, and she recently played Saul Goodman's assistant on Breaking Bad. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. What do you all understand now about audiences that you didn't get maybe when you first started?
I think the audience is smarter than you think they are.
Huh.
Sometimes I see comics and a lot of improv comedians will kind of dumb down what they're doing to try and explain it to the audience, but because they think, well, my brain's faster and they understand, and I understand it better than they will. But the audience is smart, and they like to figure out what's going on. I like watching an audience's like delayed reaction when they catch a joke with a stand-up comic. So I think they're smarter than we think they are.
Yeah, and really, I mean, funny is funny, so. Even if you dumb your set down and people still don't laugh, guess what? You're probably not funny, I mean, would be my guess.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, even if you're like, I'm the best comedian ever, if people aren't laughing. Yeah, and that's true on stage, too. You'd be like, oh, they just didn't get it. It's like, no, probably the timing was off or, you know, it just wasn't as good tonight. That's right. Why, that's what happened.
But sometimes, at least in stand-up, audiences are different in the sense that some of them are more subdued, you know, and some of them are great from the get-go. Some of them you have to like dig it out of them, and some of them are great and then they die down by third comedian. Everybody's going, oh no, they're already dead. So there's a energy to them. They have their own energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they come with a life form sort of where that they participate. Like some of them might like dirty a little bit more, and some of them might like wacky a little bit more, and some of them might like cerebral. There tends to be sometimes they like certain thing, and not totally, but some audiences like certain kinds of humor, and then some of them are just great from the get-go.
Yeah, and a lot of times you can tell at the beginning. You can kind of, if you've been doing it for a while, you can kind of read your audience and see how they're reacting to stuff. I mean, there are audiences. I've done shows for a full house, and they literally just kind of giggle at things that you think are killing. Mm-hmm. But then afterwards, they seek you out to tell you it's the best show they've ever seen.
Exactly.
And then you think, well, why don't you audibly laugh? Because that sure would help all of us up there. But then there are some people that will laugh when you just walk out onto the stage.
Right.
So those are kind of great people to have.
Yeah. And it's that group mentality, too. It's like maybe they thought it was hilarious, but nobody else is laughing. So it's like, well, I'll just laugh secretly to myself in my chair.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, one of the hard things about what you all do is that you're like Dorothy Hamill, right? For it to work properly, it has to look completely effortless and like it's just happening in the moment. And I've never done it, but I have to imagine it doesn't always feel that way.
Mm-mm.
No.
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 It's
no,
so
no,
awkward.
No. Yeah. Oh, no. And your goal is to still seem natural, but not let it hit you. Unfortunately, I have the face and whatever it is that as soon as it goes wrong, you know,
right.
You know, so you have to really, really try hard to keep that secret. But and then you have to, in stand-up, you have to try something else. If your jokes aren't working, you do crowd work or you try a different approach or, if, you know, you talk to them, something that sort of gets them out of the rut, whatever you're in, you know, that kind of thing. So
yeah, I think that applies to both improv, comedy, live theater, because there's always something that's going to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in theater, you're just like, this is the script, so we're going to keep going, and that prop is broken, but okay, let's pick it up, and it's part of this new bit. It's so great. We didn't plan this, and everybody's like, it's amazing. When that fell on the ground, hilarious. And you're like, yeah, it was great. We planned it all along.
That is true, that sometimes the most accidental impromptu thing can make it awesome.
Oh,
that's a good feeling, too.
Yeah, scary and great.
Yeah.
I would imagine, I mean, what you all do is in some ways scary in different ways. So, Linda, you're out there by yourself. And Tina and Amanda, you're out there relying on other people, right, to be as good as they need to be or to give you what you need, which I would imagine sometimes really happens and sometimes doesn't. And you know before you start that it's not going to happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you try and surround yourself with people that are supportive, obviously.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
You, like Linda was saying, sometimes you just like other people better than you like others, that it's in life or in, you know, performing. So it's a rush for sure to get out on stage and not have anything planned. But I think that it's a fun rush. It's like if you're going skydiving, you'd rather go skydiving with all your friends than with a bunch of weirdo strangers.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, we basically are skydiving on stage because well, there's probably more planning in skydiving than there is in improv, but I'd say there is definitely a harness and somebody strapped to the back of you.
Tandem to some guy who's like, will he pull
right.
the string?
But I mean, that's, you know, it's that kind of rush that you get. And so if you have been doing it and are able to surround yourself with people mm-hmm. that you trust and that you get along with on and off stage, then it falls into place 60% of the time. So
60%. Those aren't great odds, but I guess they're better than.
Yeah, that's my, know, a friend of mine always said that improv is very successful 60% of the time. So I think he was probably right. It's Landon. So he's really right. So
it's better than blackjack, I guess.
For sure. Yeah. It's less expensive.
Exactly.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Craig in Dallas. Hi, Craig.
Hey.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to know if their biggest influences were other females or male comics.
Thanks for your call.
All right, thanks.
Only females. No. I'm kidding. No, for me, there's so many. I mean, Eddie Izzard, Brian Regan, from the old days, Elaine Boozler, now Kathleen Madigan, you know, Gilda Radner. There's just tons. It's like all kinds of. And now there's some young comedians like John Mulaney. He's awesome. Mm-hmm. A new guy, Nate Bogotsky, Amy Poehler, Tina Fey, Mindy Kaling. There's different. I mean, it's like constant influencing, you know, ideas and inspiration. So not one.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's both for me. I grew up like sneaking downstairs to watch Saturday Night Live with my dad. He would let me come down there. So that's kind of where I was initially influenced, and it's been around for a while. So I was able to sneak downstairs and watch it with him. And mm-hmm. so seeing all of that cast, you know, as they were, as they have evolved. But of course, I always would watch, you know, I Love Lucy and I loved the Carol Burnett show. But it's not just women or men for me. It's just really merit-based, I guess, just the people that I was drawn to comedically.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would also, with all the people that you guys have mentioned, as well as, you know, throw in some rock stars as well, because I love music, so just always wanting to have that kind of vibe as a performer.
Right.
That live theater can be as exciting as live music, I think, is my kind of my jam.
So what are you looking for when you watch someone else perform in any capacity? I mean, is it just the way they handle a moment, or do you even know what you're looking for before you go in?
I'm fond of uniqueness. I mean, when somebody gives me something I haven't seen, or that it's so organic, or that it's just hugely funny to me. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, I am lifted by someone really funny, it lifts me and go, you know, I want to go, I want to do that. I know I have a lot of bitter friends who are like, oh, they're funny, you know. but for me, it really does lift me. And like, I got to go write or, you know, find something inside me.
Right.
So
I always look for a couple of things. Like when I'm seeing something, whether it's, you know, comedy at the Comedy House or just somewhere else, any kind of live performance, I like to generally, I am entertained if people are committed to what they're doing, because a lot of times entertainers aren't committed and they kind of give up. And so seeing somebody really commit is entertaining to me because I know it's hard. And then I love to laugh. So any way that people can make you laugh, like Linda said, in a unique way is always fun to watch. When people can surprise you, because I think there's a lot of people that say, well, that's been done, that joke's been done, or that movie plot has been done. Well, everything has been done.
Mm-hmm.
So when people are thinking of new ways for a live performance or, you know, a television show or a movie, just kind of reinventing the wheel is really cool to me to watch.
Yeah, I just think it's going in and being totally open and to somebody's performance. And for me, what's impressive is just that full body, full throttle commitment to whatever part they're doing. If I'm going to see a play, for example, and that would apply when the few times I've been to see comedy and that kind of thing as well. It's that full investment, that organic in the moment. I'm listening and responding, whether it's to the audience or it's to my fellow actors, and you just get swept away. you forget that, oh, I've seen Romeo and Juliet 400 times, but something about this interpretation and how in the moment this actor or actress is, it just transports you back. And that's to me, is the magic. That's what I look for when I go to a live performance.
It seems like an interesting challenge when you are performing material with a set cast. Maybe you have, 22 performances of the mm-hmm. same show. You know where the surprises are going to happen because everybody in the company knows what's going to happen.
Right.
What does it take to sort of maintain the energy that feels like this thing is a surprise and not fall into kind of a place where it becomes rote?
I think for any performance, really, I think it's, for theater especially, it's committing to the objectives. It's, what does my character want in this moment? And this is happening to this person for the first time. What's at stake if they don't get what they want?
Mm-hmm.
And if you approach it like that every night and you have players around you, like at Kitchen Dog, we have an ensemble of 40-plus company members. So it's that thing of, like, you feel like you can play, and yes, things do morph and change a little bit on a nightly basis. So if you come and see a show Thursday night, it may be different closing night. Something about, if you just follow that path that the playwright has given you with those objectives and those actions, it's going to be new for you every night, and those surprises should and will surprise you and might move you to a new place, and it should move you. You shouldn't have to force or put anything on it. And I would think that would be the same for, like, good material. Like, if you're able just to get in it and write it, it will do the heavy lifting for you, is the way. The text should do the heavy lifting for you.
For sure.
In stand-up, though, sometimes you can have a great, the same material. One night it will kill, and the next night, they're like, nah, we don't like this. And it's always a kind of a, oddity that the same material. So obviously you're doing something wrong, or the audience is different, or whatever the combo is, because, and it's not just me.
Right.
You guys are looking at me funny. But I've seen it with a couple other people. But and it's weird. It's like we're all going, why, this just worked great last night. Why mm-hmm. is it not happening? And when you have a showcase, like you have like 8 comics, there's a thing called the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's a spot where that person, whoever lands in it, gets, it's really the connection. And sometimes if you're on the peripheral, where it's like the first person or the last or whatever, you might not get as much from the audience. But sometimes it's all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really, it's always changing. It's really, you just never know, and you got to be ready. And if they're like a little bit quieter than normal, then your job is to do something to get them. But you don't always get them.
Well, I would imagine as an artist, those times when for whatever reason it doesn't work, that's got to make you crazy. And yet you can't really allow that to stick with you for too long, or else you'll never get back out there.
Yeah. I think when you're doing it early on, you probably let it get to you more. And younger performers across the board, whether it's in theater, comedy, music, whatever, I'm sure if they have a bad set, they let it get to them. I mean, I used to think about shows for weeks on end afterwards. But now you have to figure out what went wrong and how could it have been better and how could you have done a better job. And then sometimes it's, out of your control, and then you have to learn from it and move on. If you dwell too long, then you'll end up giving up,
mm-hmm.
like totally on the
form. That can even happen to you in the middle of a show. I mean, something goes awry. Maybe that monologue that worked so great the last night just tanked, and you went up on a line and somebody's cell phone went off, and it's super distracting. But if you let that roll into the next scene, the whole show just will go down the slippery slope straight into the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the more, as you get more mature, and we're all, 24 right now.
Right.
It's amazing.
23.
Sorry.
That's my age too. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Our face cream is working. Incredible. But as you get more mature as an artist, I think that's what you come to realize, is like, let it go and move on so that the show can keep moving forward.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Gene on the line in Dallas. Hey, Gene.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Great, thank you.
I just want to comment on 2 points that your guests made. First point was that so many comedians come from a place of pain, and we know that research has shown, especially in alcoholic families, there's usually one child who becomes the clown, some child who takes on the role of the person who breaks the tension by always making somebody laugh. Now, I don't know if any of your guests have ever been to that place, but I just find it interesting that they were able to identify that. And then for me personally, I've always wanted to be a humorist, somebody who makes people laugh. But they made a point that, you know, you got to be able to think quickly on your feet, and I think that that's my weakness. I'm so flat-footed, but I have found that the folks who help to make me laugh have always been quick with some kind of comeback to break whether the tension or the monotony and just get people going in a different direction.
Well, Gene, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. Anybody want to respond to that?
I'll go first. Mm-hmm. My mother is a preacher and my dad is an insurance. So I had a pretty normal life growing up. I mean, it wasn't from anything. Like, I didn't have a weird childhood. I had a wonderful childhood. It was great. I don't know. I was always insecure about the way I looked growing up. So I think that's probably where my defense mechanism came in. So, that's kind of, I guess that's my defense mechanism.
I had a very weird family. So I had a lot of source for material, but I don't know how much is it like environment versus who you are and all that kind of stuff. I mean, because I was really, really shy, and so I mean, I wasn't always cracking jokes that much until later.
Were you thinking them? Can you remember back that far?
Like, well, you know, it's a long way.
No, you know what I'm saying. Though, sometimes you picture yourself at six, and you may not be able to get in your head at six.
I drew like mm-hmm. I like to draw, and I would draw funny things. Like it would be like a normal drawing, but it would do like, you know, I can't even think of anything, like a car crashing. Imagine that. But
hilarious.
So there would be humor there, and then. Like when I do a project, it would be humor. Like I remember writing a play, seventh grade, and it was sort of this takeoff on MASH with females. Oddly enough, they're on soldiers, and so it was, you know, this whole thing. But anyway, so there was always just kind of constant humor in my world, but it wasn't from necessarily pain, but there was pain.
We're speaking this hour with Linda Stogner, who is a co-founder of Backdoor Comedy, Amanda Austin, who performs and teaches at Dallas Comedy House and is executive producer of the Dallas Comedy Festival, and actress Tina Parker, who is administrative director and co-artistic director of Kitchen Dog Theater. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. And gift certificates are available at 214-768-CAPE or smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Tina Parker of Kitchen Dog Theater, Amanda Austin of Dallas Comedy House, which has a special New Year's Eve night coming up, and Linda Stogner of Backdoor Comedy, which also has a special New Year's Eve night coming up. I checked the schedule. Tina, I don't think you guys have anything on New Year's Eve at Kitchen Dog, but if you do...
No, okay. We just like to party on our own.
You can go check out these guys' shows.
Yeah, yeah.
How much do you think a sense of humor is innate? I mean, just within my own family, there are people who are just funny and seem to have always been funny, and there are people who are lovely people but are not. They can appreciate humor, but they don't generate it on their own.
You go.
Well, in stand-up, I've sort of seen, obviously, the better ones, the ones who are more successful, I think, it's innate. It's part of them. It's who they are. They're special. I mean, they're gifted. I think there are professional stand-ups, people who make a living at stand-up, who really are not naturally funny, but they've learned how to do it. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people do corporate shows. You learn the rhythm. You learn the things. And you can I had a theory. If you talk loud, you do hack material, you those kind of things, like salesmen. You can do comedy like a salesman, like you can do traditional things, not like street jokes, but like the typical topics, like men, women, that kind of thing. you can get laughs because I've seen it. We've all seen it. Like,
absolutely.
You know, people who are just, you've heard these jokes a million years and the audience is still laughing. And you go, why are they laughing? But I think that's possible because I've seen it. Now, they're not going to make lots of money or be famous or, you know, special, but I think that can happen.
Well, it's funny that you say, I mean, it sounds a little bit like AM talk radio. And it's not to say that everything we do here is so different, but it is kind of like there's a formula that you can use. And one might argue there's a formula to what, you know, public radio does too, but there is a way to do it.
Right. And it I don't think it comes from, but the inside, you know, your abilities, I think it's a learned skill.
Mm-hmm.
But the truly special comics that inspire people and live on are, I think it's a gift. I really do.
I would totally agree with that. I think that's true of anybody that's a performer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll have, we do general auditions at Kitchen Dog, and you'll have people come in and you're like, man, this person is skilled. They've got the text. It's great. And then you'll have another person come in, does the same monologue, but there's something about them. They have what I like to call the it that's not teachable, that's not, I mean, it's like a light shines down from the heavens.
Like you can't take your eyes off
this
person.
There's something about it, and you can't teach that or buy it or, you know, cover yourself in glitter or whatever. Like
right,
it's not, it's just not going to be, it just won't ever be you. Not to say that everybody, those other people aren't going to be successful. But there's just something about that innate ability that just makes a difference to me.
I agree.
Yeah, we teach a lot of classes, and I always say that anybody can take an improv class. So we can teach people the basics of improv, but we can't teach you a sense of humor. So if you're not good, if you're not funny, we can help you be better. But if you're funny, we can make you be great. Because I do think there are just some special people that you can see it in a level one class in the first couple of weeks. That they have something that not everybody else has.
Do you actually say that to students? Like, if you're not funny, we...
No. So if you're hearing this now, no. But, you know, I mean, everybody is going to, even, like you said, your relatives who you think some of them aren't funny, we can help them bring out what... Because everybody has a sense of humor. It's just, where does it fall on that scale? And is it funny to other people? So we can kind of help you find your voice. So that's kind of what those classes are about, is finding your comedy voice. But then there's just some people that they just have it. And you can't,
shine.
Yeah. I mean, you can't help it. And you just want to see them on stage all the time. And so, I mean, yeah, it's innate for a lot of people, I think.
Well, I also think, too, like with the classes, I think it's good to help the person gain a sense of confidence to be able to take that risk that, like you said, like, oh, I want to be a comedian. It's like, well, the longer you put it off, the scarier it's going to be. So I think I've always encouraged actors to take improv classes and things like that, because it just gives you that sense of confidence that maybe will help take you to another level.
Right. And it's an intermediate step before the stage.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I can get this behind me and then I can go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's even good
as a
refresher. I mean, like, I've often wanted to take some classes. It's been a while since I've been in a class, just to kind of juge it back up a little bit.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Lori on the line in Dallas. Hey, Lori.
Hi, how are you all?
Great, thank you.
Well, I years ago, I took a comedy gym kind of class. I'd always wanted to do stand-up, and I lived in Austin at the time. And I would go to open mic nights, like, every weekend, like clockwork, and do my stuff. But my stage fright was over the top. Like, I don't know how I even performed on stage. But once I was on stage, I was fine. But getting on stage, I had, like, no saliva. You know, I don't even know how words got out of my mouth. But how do you cope with that? Does that just, how do you get around that? I mean, now that I'm older, I don't know if I would have that same kind of response. Kind of curious to try it out again. But I just wanted to ask that.
Thanks for calling. Has stage fright been an issue for any of you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I still, not that much. No, seriously. No, it's always a thing. I mean, sometimes it can just be nothing, and then sometimes it can be really prevalent. It seems like the higher the risk or the more important the project, the bigger things are. But the only remedy I see is just keep doing it. That's the only thing that gets better.
She also probably needs to drink a little bit before her set. I always have the most stage fright when it's either something like it's newer material or a newer show concept that I've never done before,
I also get nervous when I have friends in the audience. Oh, yeah. I don't get nervous when I have strangers. But when my friends are there or my family is there, and that's who I used to want to be there when I wasn't any good, because I knew they would laugh out of courtesy. But now I'm the most nervous around people that a huge group of people I know. Oh, I'd much rather perform for 10,000 strangers than 20 friends.
No, I would agree. I'm sitting here nodding my head. I totally agree. I think.
So do you think there's a relationship between stage fright and that rush of adrenaline when you've had a really good night? Do you think one heightens the other?
To an extent,
I don't
probably.
Know.
Too much stage fright would get in the way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I like it better when I don't have as much, where I can just really drive the bus, you know, instead of trying to get rid of demons. I'm really focused on, and I'm in charge, you know.
Right.
That's the most fun, and it tends to, for me anyway, end up more successfully if I can just focus and have a good time. Because then you got everything focusing on what you're doing, as opposed to don't get rid of this, don't look at that person, don't look at the guy not laughing, just focus, stay, you know, that kind of thing.
It's like that stat that I was talking about, which is that live performers, before you go on, it's like the equivalent of a low-grade car crash.
Yeah.
And that we put ourselves through this every on a nightly night. Basis. It's kind of sad and hilarious for all of us. Too much can be debilitating. Some of it can be – it's good to keep yourself on your toes, though. If you get too flat-footed – I mean, it's just like sports. You go flat-footed, you're going to lose the game. Something – the script's going to pass you by, and the audience will catch up, and they'll be like, boring. I already know what's going to happen. So a little bit is good to keep the juices flowing.
Yeah.
So you all do this thing where you get feedback, right, from the people that you're serving. They clap or they don't. They laugh or they don't. They jeer or they cheer. I mean, what kind of compliment to your performance actually sticks with you and matters to you? And what kind, as nicely as it might be intended, doesn't really do anything for you? Or do you make a distinction? Is it always nice, or if you hear from someone who you think, well, they don't really know what they're talking about, but thanks?
Well, you know, this is going to sound terrible, but when you get a compliment from someone, like you're in a show, maybe it's out of town, you get a compliment from someone, and then they may compliment another comedian on that same show that's not necessarily your favorite, or what they do is not something you admire, you kind of go, dang it. They're like, they're telling everybody this. So it wasn't necessarily, I mean, maybe they did like everybody, but it doesn't feel like, you know, that sounded horrible. I like every compliment.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense.
Some
people will just like walk by you and say, good show. And that's very nice of them. They don't have to say that. But, I mean, are they going to say that to everybody everywhere? Or they do that out of obligation? I think when somebody, like, really compliments you as a performer individually, those are the ones that I remember. I really enjoyed watching you on stage. Or it was really hilarious when you said this. Or how did, you know, that seems to be a little bit more genuine and they resonate. But, again, like Linda said, we're all so nervous and sick, and so you can please tell us good show.
Yeah,
and we'll still count that in our fanny pack of compliments.
There's never been too many compliments. God, I can't handle this.
Also, there are those of us that when a show is really bad, we want to hide in the green room.
Well, and even if a show's good, I mean, I don't know. Do you guys have? I mean, I know a lot of theater actors that are, get awkward, like having to go out and socialize after you've been someone else for a while is always strange and like
kind of shake it off.
Look at me, I'm not responding appropriately to your compliment.
Right.
Oh, well, I'm a dork or whatever. I think, I just think for us, for me, it's just if somebody had a genuine experience and they felt moved enough to stay afterwards, whether all they can say is congratulations or whatever, it's like you stayed. You obviously had an experience that for some reason you wanted to tell me about, and I think that's awesome. Like whether how dorkily I accept it or not.
Yeah, people are always dorks about it.
Know that I really appreciate it. My dorky response is not in relation to your compliment.
I'll tell you one thing that's sort of, it's for stand-ups anyway, is that after a show, everybody's sort of lined up waiting for something, you know.
And, compliments, money.
It's awful when, you know, another guy, they did really well. Say, oh, you were awesome. And they look at you and go, yeah.
That is the worst, isn't it?
And you're like, ooh.
When they walk right past you and hug everyone else. Yeah, and you're like, oh, no, I
or they just say, hi.
You should have been here last week.
Let's go back to the phones now. We have Deborah on the line in Valdosta. Oh. Hi, Deborah.
Hey.
Hi, yeah, go right ahead.
I'm really glad. Oh, well, let me tell you. I'll flip over in a different character because I get real jumpy sometimes. Just honored to listen to you gals and comedies. Just blessed. Grandparents all the way down through daddy and mama and relatives. So I'm pretty funny, and my children are even funnier. So I'm, like I said, I'm older, and I see what you, confidence is a big deal. I was listening to what you said about the impromptu classes. That sounds like something, but I'm pretty far off, and driving down far very often is rough on me, especially in the winter. So what I want to know is, are there places in the area that are like people just show up with some kind of little skit and they do it?
Well, I'm not sure. Where do you live?
It says Valdosta.
Valdosta.
Or Valdosta.
Okay. You know, sometimes there'll be an open mic place.
Oh, it's northwest of McKinney.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. If you want to drive down to Dallas, I'll just do a plug, Backdoor Comedy and Dallas Comedy House, there's open mic nights. And you can just sign up and do your thing and just... you can do pretty much whatever, you know, you can,
yeah, we're pretty,
whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Some places have 3 minutes. We're like 3 minutes. And I think you guys
we're three to five.
Mm-hmm. And so, open mic nights are the place to start.
And yeah. I know there's community theater and like churches sometimes will put on performances that are not professional, but,
that's a great place to get your start. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, a lot of times they'll post either things in the weekly papers looking for auditions. You can look, I'm trying to think, I don't even know. There's an organization called Stage that's still around. You just can be a member, and they'll post opportunities for every theater, a lot of other places post opportunities for auditions. And I think even if you just go and do a general audition somewhere, it's just good to get your
seen.
Feet wet.
Yeah,
to
mm-hmm.
be seen, because then you can get in there and be like, that was the worst experience of my life. And you'll know that maybe that's I'm not cut out for that or. I just say,
you just have to do it.
Yeah. You just have to do it.
Start
she's
now.
She's northwest of McKinney. I mean, I don't know. Like, well, no, I guess coming to Dallas is the best bet.
So I have to ask, Tina, I know that there's talk of a spinoff show with the Saul Goodman character. Are you part of that at this point? Are you?
I don't know. I hope so. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, you know. Francesca is important, you guys.
Forgive me, because I didn't know her name. It's Francesca.
Yeah, it's Francesca. I hope so. I mean, I'm still got hope for it. I know he's busy filming a bunch of stuff right now, so I'm not sure when they'll get started. Not until, I think, mid-2014 maybe is when they'll get started. So
I
haven't heard anything.
Through.
Yeah, everybody cross your fingers.
That'd be great.
Mama
needs
to keep her insurance.
Right. And tell us about New Year's Eve at both of your places. People can make reservations now at Dallas Comedy House.
It's pretty casual. It's just an improv show. So it'll be focused around people's good and bad and hilarious New Year's experiences.
Oh, fun.
So it's pretty casual.
And we have our traditional lineup with headliner Paul Verghese and Aaron Arianpour and myself and Jan Norton, Johnny Elbow, Sherry D. Lester. I'm not quite sure who else is on it, but, Sherry Bell. And, it's just kind of a few of us before Paul and Aaron. So it's a great show.
Linda Stogner is a stand-up comic, TV producer, and co-founder of Backdoor Comedy. Amanda Austin is executive producer of the Dallas Comedy Festival and performs and teaches at Dallas Comedy House. Tina Parker is administrative director and co-artistic director of Kitchen Dog Theater, and she played Francesca on Breaking Bad. It's been great to have you all with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. Mm-hmm.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.